Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. And way to bum us out there, Marilyn Smith, with the prediction of snow. Thanks a lot. We're here to talk about gardening today, and snow just doesn't fit into the conversation with Deborah Knapke. She's the author and author of Gardening Month by Month in Ohio and the Best Garden Plants for Ohio. And she is also known as Ohio's Garden Sage, a little double entendre there. Deborah, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Now, the last time you were here, it was fall.
Right.
And I specifically thought, you know, we should talk then because number one, I wanted to get to know you. And number two, fall is a time when a lot of people are sort of, you know, drumming their fingers on the table thinking, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? There's actually a lot to do. But right now, things are different in the spring. It's more, when can I start doing it? When can I start doing it?
Right.
So tell us, what can we be doing right now on the cusp of a winter storm and or spring?
Well, let me respond to the winter storm. Yeah, you know, the forsythia has not bloomed yet. And the Farmer's Almanac always says, after the forsythia blooms, we're going to have three more snows.
I mentioned that on Facebook,
okay.
The rule of forsythia.
That's right. So I'm not surprised we're going to have some snow, and it's still March. Remember, March is just a very volatile month, as is the beginning of April now, because our seasons seem to be shifting. But so what can we be doing now? One thing I want to tell people not to do is please don't plant your annuals yet. I know the pansies are out in the stores and some of the primulas. Wait a little bit for the soil to warm up. However, you can plant trees, you can plant shrubs. You just have to make sure that you keep them watered and that they have been hardened off. Ask the nursery when you go buy them, you know, have these been outside? Well, yeah, okay, they're fine.
That's what you mean by that is
hardening off.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And actually right now you can be hardening off plants as well that you do have if you're starting them out in seeds. If it's warm enough outside, there's recommendations now. You can bring them out for an hour if they're in the sun or something like that.
Right. Now, most of your seeds have not been started, unless you've been starting
flower
seeds.
Well, I was going to ask you, yes, is it time to start seeds?
Oh, my goodness. Time to start seeds. The rule of thumb, here we go with rule of thumbs,
okay.
Because I can't give you exact
the rule of
dates.
Green thumbs, yeah.
The rule of green thumbs is that you have to know your frost date, which in Ohio is, or at Central Ohio, is between May 10th and May 15th. Last year, you know, I always say May 10th, and last year on May 12th, we had the snowstorm, if anyone remembers that.
I don't. I've blocked that out.
Yeah, you tend to forget bad memories. I had already had my basil
out. We did lose a lot of plant life.
Yeah, I have pictures of everything I covered because my tomatoes were out, my basil was out. Because I tend to jump the gun anyways.
See?
So, yeah. Well, don't do what I do, please.
Do as I say, not as I do, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
Well, you know, they have that disclaimer across the screen on those reality shows. Don't do this at home. So I tend to cheat. But if you cheat, sometimes you pay, like bringing all your sheets outside and covering everything up, which I have a picture of my backyard covered in white sheets. So starting seeds, you usually work before the frost date. So for argument's sake, let's just say May 10th. For those of you who are chomping at the bit, just knowing that if something happens, you'll have to cover up. You want to start tomato seeds 8 to 9 weeks before the last frost date. You want to start your brassicas, like your, that'd be your cabbages, your broccoli. I think it's something like 4 to 5 weeks before. One year, this was early in the game when I was starting seeds, I put everything out at the same time, and I always start my tomatoes early and then up pot them so that I'm putting in gallon to 2 gallon size tomatoes in by the time the frost date comes around. How did you get such early tomatoes? Well, I started my seed the beginning of March, which is a little early, but I do it anyways. So one year, I put my cucumbers in the same time as my tomatoes, and I had vines all over the benches in my little hobby greenhouse because they were all over, and I had flowers, and I had little tiny cucumbers starting, and then I had a problem transplanting them. So you have to be very careful that you don't start things too early, especially if you are starting seeds under lights, because it's difficult to – you have to keep lights on top of your seeds anywhere from about 2 to 3 inches so that you're – seedlings are getting enough light, and as they grow taller, you run out of space to pull your lights up. And then the seedlings start getting lanky, and then when you put them outside, it's hard to harden them off. You have to acclimate them to going outside. The wind, the sun, the cold, the change of temperatures. Here they've been in this cozy little light table, and then you shove them outside, and you wonder why they turn into crispy critters.
You wouldn't do it to a baby.
Yeah, that's right. So think of them that way. So there's a lot of things going on like that. Weeding.
Can I ask you about seeds before we move on, though?
Sure.
But before that, I even want to remind our listeners that this is All Sides with Ann Fisher, and you're listening to me and Deborah Kanapke. She's the author of Best Garden Plants for Ohio, but maybe better known to you as Ohio's Garden Sage. Now, about seeds.
Mm-hmm.
Are plants that you start from seed, are they somehow different than just going to the nursery and getting the seedlings at that mm-hmm. point? Are they necessarily any better, or is it just fun to start growing things earlier in the house?
That's a darn good question. There are many different reasons for growing seeds. One, you can get more variety. If you look in a seed catalog, there are hundreds of tomato varieties that you can start from seed. If you go to the nursery, now nurseries, lately I've been noticing an explosion though of tomatoes. And it used to be you had five choices. Better Boy, the boys, the girls,
yeah,
maybe
right.
a beefsteak, maybe
boys,
a Roma.
Right.
Now there are all these heirlooms out there. So if you don't get your seeds started, don't despair, because a lot of nurseries are offering great tomato varieties. But not 100 or over 100. This year I put up, I do this every year, I don't know why, but we put up 25 different cultivars of tomatoes in our seeds.
Wow.
You do have some crop failures.
Okay.
And I give a lot away, and I trade with other people who
I've
have something
that
I want.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why people like to grow seeds. You sort of are the master of your fate, and it's cheaper in the long run. So a packet of seeds can be anywhere from $1.99 to $3.49 for the really choice stuff. And you think if you spend for a four-pack of small tomatoes, $2, that's four where you could have had 25. Of course, then you have to decide what you're going to do with those 25 seedlings once you've started them.
You have to plant them eventually in the ground.
It can sometimes be an embarrassment of riches. You know, I'm looking at all these and, well, here goes to the compost pile if I haven't given them away or traded or whatever. So there are pros and cons to both. If all you want is one tomato because you have a patio, then you go and you buy that one tomato, and it makes sense. Because you also have to think about, when you're starting seeds, your time for potting them,
there's room.
Oh, place. Yeah, that's another thing.
I used to have a place. I don't in this house. I kind of miss the doing seeds,
yeah.
But I just didn't have a place for them.
There's always a reason to buy seeds. There's always a reason to buy plants. It just depends on what your situation is and what fits best for your gardening life.
Now, you were going to start to talk about weeding, and I did some weeding last weekend mm-hmm. because it's so easy to pull them out right now.
That's the best part of it. If you wait until the soil dries out, it's harder to get the roots and get it all, and you can shake them out. Now, there's one weed that you really need to be paying attention to right now. It's a little winter cress. It's very cute.
What does it look like? It's like a little mound.
It's a little mound.
Oh, yeah.
It has little tiny white flowers that are just coming into bloom now. They actually were growing in your garden in the winter. It's a little winter cress. It's in the brassica family or cabbage family. It's probably edible, but I don't know if it's tasty. It makes a gazillion seeds, honest. Gazillion.
You want to get them up before.
Yeah. And what I do, if there are no, if there are just a few blooms, I will snip out the blooms, and I will actually leave the plant, I often will separate the roots from the top. I leave the plant in the garden because it is super nutritious for the soil and for the organisms that are in it. They love this to break down this plant, and it wilts pretty quickly. But if there are any seeds on it, you need to take that out of there. Otherwise, next year you'll have a gazillion more plants.
A gazillion of something that popped up in one of my gardens that I had just actually created over the last year and a half or 2 years. One half of the garden I mulched by fall, Mm-hmm. The other half I didn't get to. Mm-hmm. And what a difference. It really showed. It was amazing.
Yeah, the wheat seed needs light to germinate. And this winter, I know we didn't have a lot of sun, and you're saying we had no light, but we did. we had enough. And I was pulling these little guys out in January when we had that real warm weather before the snow hit,
mm-hmm.
or actually December. You know, we had a weird winter.
Mm-hmm.
And I was pulling those out in the winter. But it was the spring when the soil started warming up that they were all over. So I've been pulling them up quite a bit. And I do put them in my good compost pile. I probably should explain good and bad compost mm-hmm. in a moment. My good compost pile if they don't have seeds, because they are so nutritious for the compost pile and eventually for the organisms in the soil. I have two piles. The piles where I have seeds already developing, that's the pile that is never, ever touched again. And I have my good compost pile where things go in that I mine for that wonderful black gold later on in the season. And it's an ongoing pile. I have an active pile and a passive pile. Passive means I just stack it up and let Mother Nature do it over a couple years. My active one is where I have a drum and I turn it. And if I'm good about it, I will have good compost anywhere from 3 to 6 months from turning it.
So in the bad compost pile, why have a bad one at all if you're not ever going to use it for anything per se? What, maybe I missed something there.
Because I don't throw away yard waste.
Okay.
Everything that is on my property stays on my property as much as best I can.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually that pile may be useful for something. I have no idea. Here, you want a weed plot? Here, take it from this pile.
you never know.
Yeah. It is also where I put... I'm thinking of the dandelions, if I let them go to seed, I do have dandelions, folks. The honeybees need them.
I want to ask you about those too later.
and also if you, the honeybees, well, we'll get to honeybees yeah. in a minute. It's a very sad state of affairs was on the front page today.
Right.
But, pardon me, so bad compost pile, I have it because we often have used, believe it or not, when we put paving down, we will take, and we need soil or something, we'll take it from that pile and put it underneath. Of course, unfortunately, sometimes seeds escape and I'll have weeds around my paving for a while and you're all out there shaking your heads, aren't you? but that's, you know, I don't like to throw things away into landfills.
Okay.
And yard waste is one of the easiest things we can control if we have the space to put it. Some people don't. If you live in a condo or a high rise, you don't have that option. And so you need to find a friend who will take your yard waste or whatever.
Or at the very least, responsibly recycle it
mm-hmm.
in the appropriate bags so that
right.
they're taken to the proper place.
And can be composted.
Somewhere.
Yeah, somewhere. Mm-hmm.
I have more questions about weeds, but we may need to take a short break.
Okay.
I want to talk about wild strawberry, and I want to talk about whatever you call that stuff, and that mustard weed. So
okay.
when we get back to our conversation with Deborah Konapke, author of Best Garden Plants for Ohio and Gardening Month by Month in Ohio, if you have a question or comment, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Support for WOSU comes from the Physicians Free Clinic and Voluntary Care Network, providing charity medical care for Central Ohio's uninsured patients. More about joining the Columbus Medical Association Foundation and supporting the clinic is at goodhealthcolumbus.org.
It's 20 minutes after 11. Good morning. Thanks for tuning in to WOSU 820 today. Coming up on Fresh Air from NPR, Mark Potok of the Southern Poverty Law Center talks with Terry Gross about their new report, Rage on the Right, about the record level of hate groups and extremists in the United States. That's coming up today at noon on Fresh Air here on WOSU 820, NPR News. Showers this afternoon, possibly heavy at times, high near 56. Currently it's 55 and partly cloudy. Rain turning to snow overnight, low around 26, that frost that Ann was talking about before you plant your You get all your seedlings ready to go. Keep an eye out. But tomorrow, mostly sunny with a high near 42. Spring will be coming soon enough.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. My guest is Deborah Knapke, the garden sage, better known as. We're talking about right now, I want to get back to the weed issue. Time to pull your weeds because the earth is saying, is beckoning you with its looseness versus planting things. Pulling things is the work of the day. And I want to talk about what I think of as or what I call wild strawberry. And then also I think it's the wild mustard or whatever that stuff is. It's just proliferating and is not a native species, I don't think.
Right. Okay. First, the wild strawberry, fall strawberry, it has a lot of different common names, but it makes the little fruits that look like a strawberry that if you put it in your mouth, you immediately spit it out because it's really nasty.
I tried once. It
actually is edible, but it's not tasty. And various animals eat it. Groundhogs eat it. And it keeps them out of the garden if you have that in your lawn. I actually have a lot of it in my backyard. I have a lot of weeds. You know, when someone who's into turf comes over my house, they just shake their head.
So
just forewarning. So I use it as a ground cover in my backyard.
Okay.
The issue, though, is keeping it out of your garden
right.
bed because it makes those long, you know, it's like strawberries. It's related to strawberry.
Right.
It's a Waltstenia, for those of you who like botanical names. But it makes those runners, just like a strawberry.
Right.
And when you pull one, you'll notice it's connected to another. And it does love good garden soil. And it grows very nicely in good garden soil.
So you're trying
soil.
To flatter me now.
Yeah. Anyways, but you don't want it in your garden.
Right.
And you have to pull it. And you just have to keep after it.
Okay.
If what you want is lawn, then you don't want it in your lawn. I mean, turf, a good, you know, solid grass. It does compete with grass. And there are products that if you don't want it, it will take it out. But again, as I said, along with not letting my yard waste go out of my yard, I also don't use pesticides, herbicides, et cetera, because I'm trying to support the wildlife that I've invited in with my beautiful garden.
Right. Right. So, fertilizer, but yeah, we don't bring in the green trucks and the spray and stuff. So I know that ultimately we're not going to have that velvety lawn because we don't do that. And I'm willing to, and it's just good to know that I feel so much better knowing it's because of the quality of my soil that's attracting them. And then the mustard stuff.
Okay. I take it you're talking about the wild mustard that is taking over.
Entire forests.
Yes, it is. It's also called garlic mustard.
Yes.
And believe it or not, it's edible. In its rosette stage, when it's young, it's quite tasty. I've made salads with it. It is one way to – it was one of the greens that people used, I believe, back in colonial times. Mm. I'm not sure if it was brought over purposefully or not, but it is not a native. And like that little tiny little mound wintercress that I told you about, the garlic mustard is related to that. And it makes a gazillion seeds. Okay. It is a biennial, although I've noticed that some of them have annualized. By biennial, what I mean is the first year it's a rosette, and the second year it blooms. But a lot of the garlic mustard now is doing that in 1 year. So right now, when it's a rosette, and it's young and still tasty, either take it up, put it in the compost pile, eat the young leaves, whatever, but do not leave it in the garden. Once it sends up a bloom, it has enough energy in that rootstock to turn some of those blooms into seeds, even after you take it out of the garden and put it in the compost pile. So you need to separate those blooms from the rest of the plant if you are going to put the rest of the green stuff in your compost pile. Also, once it starts blooming, you probably don't want to eat it. It bitters out.
Okay.
But I know there are cleanup days in various natural areas because
right.
it's just invaded. And it is not a good plant, even though you can eat it. You can eat it. But if you see it, get it out of there because it just spreads like wildfire.
Too much of an okay thing.
Mm-hmm.
614-292-8513 or email us at allsides at WOSU. Tom, you're on the air with Deborah Kanapke. You have a problem with squirrels.
Yes, I have a problem with squirrels. They come from blocks away. And I look out there every morning and they're looking at me with that look like, when you go get that stuff out there for us. Now, I was in a garden store the other day and I saw a product called Critter Ritter.
Okay.
And it came in two forms, granules and liquid. And I didn't buy it. It's rather expensive stuff, $15, I think, for each of them. But I'm glad I didn't because I may get a tip from you. Deborah, what do you suggest?
Squirrels love to dig. And while a lot of times they're not eating the things in your garden, what they are looking for at this time of year is the nuts that they planted in the fall that they can't remember where they are.
Yeah.
So what they don't like, though, are scents. They have a very sensitive nose, and they don't like certain smells, certain compounds. And what you were going to buy with Critter Ritter or any of these other pest, what are they calling them? Or animal, I can't remember the name they're calling them now, but they're usually these combinations of rotten eggs and rotten beer. It could be urine of different animals that are predators of the squirrels.
I looked at the ingredients and one, I don't remember the name, but it sounded like something cayenne pepper. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, capsaicin. Capsaicin, which is the that's the thing that makes your whole body burn when you eat chilies. And they don't like that. Their noses and their paws and their tongues are very sensitive to that. So you could always, year, what I did is I grew habanero peppers. And then I spun them in a food processor with a lot of water and sprayed that on my plants. And that was a good protection, although it made my food processor hot for many uses after that, so it was not the greatest idea.
I'm looking at a bottle here of Frank's Original Red Hot Cayenne Pepper Sauce.
Mm-hmm.
That might be worth a try too.
And it is. It will keep them away. But the caveat with those kinds of using that is that after each rain, you will have to reapply it.
Yep. Well, I'm willing to do anything except get an armed. I'm in the neighborhood, but that sounds like a good idea, and mm-hmm. I'll try them both and do a little experimenting.
Yep, and you know, squirrels, they're very smart, so they will figure out a way how to get. They'll push things away and everything. So good luck.
You try to put a bird feeder up and put it in a place where they won't find a way to get to it.
Yeah, we've tried all kinds of things with that too. Yeah, go to Wild Birds Unlimited. They'll tell you lots of funny stories.
I bet.
Well, thank you very much.
Thanks, Tom, for your call. One year, it hasn't happened at this house yet, but in a house I had in Clintonville, they wouldn't dig up the bulbs. They would wait until the flower mm-hmm. bloomed, and then the next morning, whether it's those, you know, you wait for those crocuses all mm-hmm. winter long, and the next morning I'd wake up and they'd all be, you know, beheaded, mm-hmm. and the daffodils. Maybe not daffodils.
Not daffs, the tulips.
Tulips. Mm-hmm. It was torture. It's like, why don't you just grab the bulb and get it over with instead of torturing me? They like to eat bulbs, don't they?
They do like bulbs. They do like crocus. You also, the nipping of the top, that could be either deer or rabbits, too.
Okay.
So we have a lot of critters that come to our gardens and a lot of animal protections, repellents. That's the word I want to be for. Animal repellents. And they work sometimes.
That's too much work for me, but I just like to complain about them. How do you know when the soil's ready to work?
It's based on temperature and friability. If the soil's really wet, do not work it. You're going to make concrete. I'm trying to remember, you know, working the soil temperature-wise, we want warm days. We want the soil to feel warm to the touch.
Okay.
You'll notice that if you were to dig in the soil now, because the soil is kind of nice when you're pulling up those weeds.
Hasn't been too rainy.
Cold.
Yeah.
The soil is cold, mm-hmm. and it's going to be cold. You want the top 6 to 8 inches to warm up enough when you're planting many of your plants, especially your annuals. And I want to stress again, most of your annuals do not want to be planted now. Some exceptions a little later might be your pansies, your primulas.
Well, pansies can kind of almost
They like it cold.
They're almost perennials now for me. I mean, they come back every year.
They often self-seed.
Yeah.
What you might be seeing are seedlings.
Okay.
So they're what we call hardy annuals or some violets are perennials. Yeah, well, that's the tender perennial issue.
Yeah, that's
another
right.
That's another day. Okay. But
sorry.
That's all right. But soil warmth is, if you get on the Beagle, I want to mention the Beagle.
Oh, yes, the Beagle.
The Backyard Garden Landscape Report that's put out by the Cooperative Extension. It usually starts the first week of May. And you can get to it. I have to flip my page here so I can look at it. It's real easy. It's bygl.osu.edu. And if you forget that, just put in the Backyard Garden and Landscape Report in Google, which is one of my favorite friends, and you'll get to their weekly report, which tells you about soil temperatures, tells you about the bugs, the diseases, and everything that's out there on a weekly basis and what you should be looking for. And it is something I read every week during the season because it tells me what's going on in Ohio.
Okay, so that's bygl.osu.edu,
mm-hmm.
although you can always go to our website at wosu.org/allsides, and we will post that website, bygl.osu.edu. 614-292-8513 if you want to talk to Deborah Kanapke. And Madeline, you're on the air.
Hi, I have two questions and
one
idea. My first question, there is a plant that is up now. It's a perennial. It's purple. I've seen purple and I've seen white. It's like a little balloony, pocketbooky looking flower. And I love it. And it starts with an H.
Hellebores?
Spell it for me.
Hellebores.
Is it
blue? Are you sure it's white?
Whites
and purple?
One neighbor has white, and one neighbor has like a bluey-purpley, yes.
Bluey-purpley, yeah. These are hellebores. The other name for it is Lenten rose because it blooms during Lent.
I love them, love them, love them.
In my yard, I have about 20 different varieties.
Are they blooming now?
They're blooming now. I have a yellow Picotee.
Oh.
I have doubles. Come to my garden. I just had a bowl of them on the kitchen table. I have a big, wide, broad bowl, and I go out and I just pick all the different colors. There are green ones, cream, you name it.
Wow, I don't think I even know what you're talking about.
Oh, I'm smitten. I am smitten because I was walking the dog, saw white ones, and then my neighbors across the street have the bluey, purpley,
mm-hmm.
and of course they're going to thin them and gift me some, which is
right.
The best way. Oh, cool. Okay, second question.
Okay.
Real strawberries. I got tons
yes.
of plants, and they make lots of little runners, but I don't get much fruit. What's the scoop?
Okay, sometimes we give our strawberries too much nitrogen.
I don't give them anything.
Okay. Aha! That's the other side
Truth
of the
coin. Comes out, Madeline.
Fruits and vegetables need compost. They need nutrition in the soil to make that fruit because they have to spend a lot of energy to make fruit. And there is, and this is another website that I was going to mention, the Ohio Line Fact Sheets, which is ohioline.osu.edu.
Good old OSU.
Yeah, good old OSU. And it's Cooperative Extension again.
Yep,
and
yep.
they will give you the requirements that or what strawberries need to make good fruit.
Okay.
They need phosphorus and potassium. And if you look at the NPK, nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium, on the package of whatever fertilizer you use, the second two numbers need to be pretty high. There's a product I love, and it's called Espoma, and it's a natural product. And there is one for fruits and vegetables. Take a look at it at any of your garden centers. It is made with natural products.
Okay.
And
much,
it's a slow feed.
How much sunshine? That might be the issue.
That's another issue. Well, that's the third side
they
of the coin.
They absolutely need sunshine.
Yeah, we're on the edge of the coin right now. But yeah, sun. Absolutely.
But how much? Like 10 hours, 8 hours?
They need at least 6 hours of good sun.
Okay. And then the last item, I know this probably will gross out some people, but
No.
And I have, this is, Madeline's a pseudonym because I don't want folks to.
The truth comes out.
Anyway, here's the deal. Big dog, lots of poo. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The backyard is beautifully green. So I like my yard. Mm-hmm. I like my dog. I pick up the poo. I put it in the yard, you know, garbage can. I put peat poo, peat poo, peat poo. Well, I'm trying it on my front lawn to see if my front lawn will get really green.
Yeah.
So okay. I call it poo post.
Okay.
Suppose there's a market?
I don't know. There might be. All kinds of manures are used, you know, chicken manure, cow manure, horse manure, et cetera. I don't know for sure, but I know that you should never use cat manure where people are going to be because of the parasites and the toxoplasmosis, et cetera. I do not know if that is true about dog.
I'll check it out.
Do check that out because... there may be an issue with that, and I just want to bring that up. But if there isn't, there's no reason not to use it.
The ultimate in recycling.
Yeah, down through the centuries, we have used our poo.
Wow, you're right.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you, pseudonym.
Bye-bye.
Let's go back to the strawberries. Strawberries, I grew them a lot at one point, but it seems like the plants just get tired out, or is it the soil that gets tired out, and I'm not... you know, nurturing the soil properly, and they take a lot from the soil. In other words, you have to really okay.
For when I was growing strawberries, I put compost down in the spring, and I had some of the everbearing. I had some that were a
those
bunch in the spring, and then everbearing. And now I'm growing an alpine strawberry, which is really tiny and very sweet. And you put it in salads, and you tell people what it is, and all they can think of is the very big California strawberries that you can actually see.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. These are wonderful, but and these plants self-seed, but they don't have runners like the strawberries that we use. This is a species, Fragaria alpina, for those of you who like botanical names. But I have to give them compost and every in the early spring, mid-spring, late spring, for them to bear. And they bear throughout the season, but as soon as I notice the compost has been eaten up by the organisms in the soil, I put more down for them. And it's usually leaf mold or mushroom compost, which is an animal manure that's been used by mushroom farms. So it has all that great mycelium in it. And people are going to call and ask where you can get that. So I will tell you the Schacht Family Farm out in Canal Winchester has it.
Okay.
There, that's done. but the strawberries do take a lot of feeding. You can also use synthetic fertilizers that are made for fruit production. And again, the Ohio Line fact sheets, there is one on strawberry production. There's a couple of them, I think. So you go to the Ohio Line fact sheets and you go to the garden series or the horticulture series or whatever. There's so much information on the Ohio Line fact sheets, from canning to working with tools, chainsaws, et cetera, garden, you name it. It's there because cooperative extension covers a wide variety
of
topics.
Everything. Ohioline.osu.edu or go to wosu.org/allsides for all of those links. We're going to take a short break right now from our conversation with Deborah Knapke. If you'd like to join it, give us a call, 614-292-8513. And Charlotte, I will get to your email ASAP. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher at WOSU 820 NPR News.
On the next Fresh Air, Mark Potok of the Southern Poverty Law Center talks about their new report, Rage on the Right, documenting the record number of hate groups in the U.S.
The changing demographics of the country, the election of a black man, the role of the government in the bailouts. These are some of the things that have really helped these groups grow in an extraordinary way.
Join us.
Fresh Air is coming up in just about 20 minutes here on WOSU 820 NPR News. Showers this afternoon, possibly heavy, high near 56. Currently it's 55 and cloudy. Rain turning to snow overnight, low around 26, though there should be no accumulation with that snow. Tomorrow mostly sunny with a high near 42, and Saturday a little bit more spring-like, mostly sunny with a high near 57. When you don't have time to catch the whole story, get the update with the WOSU Daily News Loop. Receive award-winning local coverage and NPR headlines emailed every weekday right to your inbox. Catch up with current events or listen to a story you missed. Don't miss a beat with the WOSU Daily News Loop. To sign up, go to WOSU.org/email.
Support for WOSU comes from Edible Columbus, a quarterly publication celebrating the local culture in our community season by season. First issue hits various Columbus locations on April 1st. More at ediblecolumbus.com.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. My guest, Deborah Knapke, author of Best Garden Plants for Ohio and Gardening Month by Month in Ohio. It's March, so you're really not supposed to be doing much of anything except weeding and getting ready to plant.
Well, there are a few things, though, that you can seed in. One of them is your peas. They should go in now.
Okay.
Your edible peas, your pods. Yum.
Does it make any difference if you do container gardening? I was talking to someone last night who builds container gardens, and he said he has started some stuff under glass.
Probably all of his lettuce seed, a lot of his brassicas, like the kale and collards and cabbage. That's all. That's getting ready. You know, April 15th, they say by then you should have all this stuff going.
Okay.
So you haven't missed a deadline yet. But think about it.
Okay. Pardon me. An email from Charlotte. She writes, I am so happy I can hardly wait to get back to work. I'm getting ready for soil preparation. I had trouble with blossom end rot last year due to a calcium deficiency in the soil. So I have this winter's eggshells saved up and crushed up, as well as coffee grounds and onion skins to keep the soil from sticking in hard clumps. Also, according to my gardening book, some seeds should go into the ground just as soon as you can work the soil, like peas and spinach.
Right.
So, Charlotte, you know, Deborah was reading your mind. Sorry I didn't get to your email earlier.
Oh.
If you would like to email us, go to allsides@wosu.org, or you can call us, 614-292-8513. Deborah's known as the Garden Sage, but she's also the Answer Lady. Two events that we want to make sure we mention. Chadwick Arboretum on campus tonight at 7 p.m., it's called Bringing Nature Home. Tell us about that event.
Doug Tellamy wrote the book Bringing Nature Home, and it is about using native plants in your gardens to support native wildlife, and that it is just a healthier thing to do. Now, for those of you that have non-native plants, myself included, non-natives are not bad. The invasive ones are bad, but not non-native, as long as you understand what you need to do to control any non-natives from escaping. Doug Tellamy is one of those people, though, that says we shouldn't be growing any non-natives.
There's purists in
every discipline. Yeah, there are purists. There's always a continuum.
Yes.
All the way out here and then the middle.
And
I'm in the middle.
Vanguard, yeah.
But he brings an excellent point that our native pollinators, our native animals, have grown up with our native plants. So that is the basis of his message tonight. I'm not going to go into too much more, otherwise why would you go to the lecture? But it's at Cotman Hall, the upside-down building on the Ag campus at the end of Fife Court.
At Ohio State University.
At Ohio State University. Sorry, I didn't say that,
did I? That's okay. They pay me to say that all the time. Green Thumbs in Delaware on Saturday at Olentangy Liberty High School. What's that?
Green Thumbs is an all-day conference, symposium, whatever. There are speakers all day long on a wide variety of topics. And there are also vendors from the Delaware, Columbus, whatever area for plants. It's to kind of get those juices going. You know, like Charlotte said, you can't wait to get back into the garden. You get stuff. So you can get mental and emotional support from the talks and that immediate gratification from buying something.
Okay. That's on Saturday, all day Saturday at Olentangy Liberty High School. If you want to know more about that, where can they go?
I believe you just go, you can put Green Thumbs. Google Green Thumbs. The Delaware Master Gardeners are putting it on, and I'm sure you'll get the whole slate of speakers and everything. And, there is an admission. $10, I believe.
Okay. And here's a question from Emma. Writes, I'm not a very good gardener. I always seem to kill my house plants. I am extremely interested in some homegrown vegetables. Is there a nice, hardy, hard to kill vegetable to maybe start out with? Anything?
Yeah.
What's the easiest thing?
The easiest. Oh, my gosh. I'm thinking of easiest. Well, first of all, start with some herbs.
I agree.
Because herbs are, for the most part, no to low care. I shouldn't say no. There's no such thing as no care, but low care, low maintenance.
Chives?
Yeah, chives. Chives
and they're pretty.
Can become a problem.
Yes.
Yeah. But because they self-seed, but they are so tasty. And once you start growing your own herbs, then the vegetables follow. I have to say my favorite vegetable is tomatoes, and I know there are issues with them, but start with just a few tomatoes. You know, you'd be the person to go out and buy a 4-pack of plants, put them in the ground, nurture them, get to know them. And if you make a mistake, there's always next year. And get to know some fellow gardeners, because we always have extra. And then, you know, maybe if you work in their garden, they'll give you some of their plants. Get to know someone who can give you that advice, because I think, and this is what I love about being a gardener and being a part of the gardener community, we love to share. We not only share our knowledge, but we share our produce, we share our plants. And that would be a good way to kind of get from that idea that you're a bad gardener. You're not. You're not. It's practice. And it's just understanding the plants that you're growing.
I think one of the things about herbs for me is there is a kind of almost an, not quite instant gratification, but it's something mm-hmm. that you can use all season long. It's
right.
Unlike, say, the strawberries, you know, most of the varieties, there's only a short span of time that you can use them.
Right.
And then the plants just there. The everbearing is an exception of that, or where you wait all season long to pull those carrots and harvest mm-hmm. the potatoes and that kind of a thing. And chives is the best one for that. And I just you know, charge back at it once a year and rip
right.
it out and do what I have to do to control it. But it's also very pretty. They have those pretty mm-hmm. purple flowers.
And they support all kinds of butterflies.
Yes.
So when you put things in like chives, which, by the way, is a non-native.
So you have to control it.
So you have to control it. You have to understand that it will self-seed, but it supports so many of our butterflies and our pollinators. It's a great little plant. And I want to mention garlic, the whole onion family. Garlic is really easy. You plant it in the fall, and then you harvest it in midsummer. And then you can brag that you have garlic. And after you plant it, you don't do anything to it.
That's another thing, that if you plant your own, you can get a lot more varieties
mm-hmm.
than you can just going to the store and what you get at the store.
Right. But then you go to the store when yours is all done.
Yes. In fact, I just bought a real huge bag at Costco the other day. Let's take some calls.
Okay.
614-292-8513. Kevin, you're on the air. Hi, Kevin.
Hey, good afternoon. I remember my great-grandmother and my grandmother and my mother used to go to the hair salon or the beauty salon or the barber shop and grab and take a bag full of hair home, and they would put it around their gardens, saying that the human scent kept away the critters. I just want to know if there's any truth to that.
There is some truth to that, although some critters get used to it. So what you often end up doing is kind of changing out your strategies.
Okay.
But human hair, especially, and for some, like deer, male hair is probably better, especially if the male eats meat.
Okay.
Because then it's recognized as carnivore. And what hair is
weird.
Yeah, well, hey. And then there's the other thing that I mentioned, I think, when I was on the phone in the fall, that if you – well, I'll get to that in a moment. But back to the human hair, it does work to a certain degree. And for bunnies, deer, I don't think it works for woodchucks, but I'm not sure.
I got a whole family of them.
Yeah, woodchucks, they're a whole different breed.
Well, can I add one more question regarding the Franklin Park community gardening thing?
Mm-hmm.
How do they keep the critters? There's deer all around here down Franklin Park area. It's incredible. I see them.
Yeah. Even those big community parks where people have little
right.
plots.
And at Franklin Park, they have mm-hmm. a fence.
Right.
And that helps. And there's a lot of human activity there.
Okay.
And I would imagine they're also using some animal repellents. I really don't know. Bill Dawson, who's the head of that program, would be the person to ask what he does. Or, you know, I believe if you get onto Franklin Park Conservatory's website, you can ask a question.
Well, I was fortunate enough to keep my house, and I live close to the park. So I said, we're going to go over there and share that what you said, get into that climate, and I'm sure I can pick up the greatest tips in the world there.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for the show. Thanks for the show. I haven't tuned in since Fred left, but you are wonderful.
Kevin.
Then, thank you so much. Well, I'll listen to you later. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening.
Thank
for calling.
You.
Let's see. Carl is going to be on the air in a second. 614-292-8513. If you'd like to speak with Deborah Kanapke, Carl, you're on
yeah.
the air.
Yeah, I was thinking as far as what grows easily in Central Ohio, tomatoes. You can't kill a darn thing. I mean, and you can't eat them all.
Well, I was going to say mine reseed themselves sometimes.
They sure do, but you don't know what you're getting.
No,
sometimes.
You don't. I know, Bill.
And cherry tomatoes.
I've had a chance to take some of those little cherry tomatoes and just mash them into the ground. Because there's green ones by the time the frost comes
right.
and just mash them into the ground, they'll be back.
Oh, definitely.
The other thing I was interested in was, broccoli is kind of fun because you can eat that stuff until the first of the year. It'll go through several freezes.
Right.
It gets more, flavorful, stronger in flavor as the year goes on.
Does it really? Okay,
yeah.
I didn't know that.
It's kind of fun to watch go through a couple of frosts. It'll still be there.
You can keep cutting it.
Yeah.
That's what's nice about it. The one thing, though, is you have to water them during a dry spell. Otherwise, they get bitter.
So if you cut it, it'll grow back? It'll keep growing that flower or
right.
whatever it is?
You cut above, and actually, Carl, I'm sure you've been doing this, but you cut from the side. You don't cut the whole thing down. You leave part of the stalk, and where there are new leaves, that's where your new little heads come out. And the heads get smaller, but they're small, and you want florets anyways.
Right, right.
So, did you ever try to plant a pawpaw tree?
Yes, I have, successfully.
How do you do that?
Well, first of all, you want them small because they tend to have a root system that doesn't like to be disturbed. I now have a pawpaw grove. Because what pawpaws do is they send up small trees from the roots.
Okay.
So I have rootlings all around. And unfortunately, the raccoons get the pawpaws the moment before I do.
Uh-huh.
It's about to be ripe for human consumption, and then they're gone.
Well, I found some growing on the Olentangy north of Henderson Road.
Yes, they're all along the bike path.
And so I picked some, and I ate some, and I've got the seeds left over, and I guess I just poke those in the ground. Huh?
Well, how do I say this politely? I need to say this politely, but they need to go through a digestive system first. Pawpaw seeds have what we call a double dormancy.
Wow.
They need to be cold. That's what we call stratification.
Yeah.
And they need to be scarred. Or they need to the seed coat needs to be weakened or
used.
So we call that scarification.
Yeah.
Now, if you have some sandpaper, you can kind of rough up that seed.
Oh, okay.
But if you've kept that seed inside over the winter, you've done it an injustice because it
needs. It's been outside for about 2 years.
Good.
In the fruit stage.
Okay.
I haven't taken them all out of the fruit.
Okay. The pawpaw needs to be stratified, and so they've been stratified if they've been outside, but they haven't been scarified.
Okay.
They need to be, that seed coat needs to be broken down. When you look at those seeds, you can see that it's one thick seed
okay.
coat.
I've always thought of scarification as what birds do when
yes.
they drop, you know, they consume and then they digest and they drop, but I never thought of it as...
Digestive juices do that.
Okay.
And thank you.
You're
right.
Welcome.
Bye.
Thanks, Carl. Let's see. Ashley, you're on the air. Two questions, huh?
Yes, I do. One, when's the best time to start your herbs?
You mean by seed?
Yes.
Okay. January? No.
No.
Actually, you know, you can start. You can start
you can
them
actually
now.
Grow them indoors. Some people do.
Right. And it depends on which seeds you're talking about. If
like
it's
basil.
I'm sorry, which ones?
Like basil.
Basil? Okay. Not yet.
Not yet.
Basil, you want to wait. I'd like to start about April 15th. The issue with basil is that the little plants come up, and we don't have enough sun. They really like sun.
Well, you can also have a freeze, too, and they don't...
Right, but you'll have to do these inside, because basil's not hardy.
Yeah, okay.
So,
okay.
Not cold hardy at all. In fact, under 40 degrees, you get black leaves.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, you can start them now. I'll be starting my basil seed in the next week or two.
Okay.
And then I just hope that the sun comes out. I have a hobby greenhouse, so I'm very fortunate that way. If you are growing under lights, those lights need to be an inch above the leaves when they emerge.
Okay.
Because they light so much.
I had a question about, I garden in community gardens on the west side of Columbus, in Franklinton, and we're kind of struggling with being able to plant things in the ground because of the soil.
So do you need to amend the soil?
Well, I don't know what that means.
It means fix it.
fix it. Actually, let's say add to it, because I'm not so sure we can fix the soil as much as enhance it. How about we say that? What you need, you know, if these gardens have been, if things have been grown there year after year after year and nothing's been put in, like compost, or, you know, if only synthetic fertilizers have been used, the plants have been getting fed, but the soil hasn't. So the soil may be depleted. So you need to bring in some leaf molds, some composted animal manures, mushroom compost, whatever, to get the soil. What you're doing is feeding the soil organisms that live there that break down grass, branches, compost, whatever. And then in breaking it down, that gives nutrition to the plants that grow in it. So that may be part of the problem, is that the soil is depleted. And certain crops deplete the soil a lot. And other crops put nutrients back in or fix nitrogen, like your bean and peas. They fix nitrogen and put it back into the soil, whereas your corn, holy cow, corn takes a lot out of the soil and often can leave behind substances that can cause other plants not to do well. We call that allelopathic, sort of like fighting other, you know, okay, I want corn to grow here and I want nothing else to grow here. So sometimes corn is one of those plants that can do that.
Are they making it that way or is it just naturally that way?
It's naturally that way. Sunflowers. Sunflower seeds.
Yeah.
When sunflower seeds are on the ground underneath a feeder, you may notice that certain plants will not grow there.
Yes.
Sunflower seeds have an allelopathic action on many plants, but not on sunflowers. So sunflowers will grow there, but not other plants. Think about that. You know, it's warfare. I'm sorry?
What about raised beds and what to fill?
Okay, raised beds, a good garden soil. Again, you're going to be adding compost. If you feed the soil, you feed your plants. Kind of think about that. Let that settle in your brain. Often raised beds are used because then you can sit on the edge and garden, or you have horrible soil and you're trying to lift the plants out of the soil you have because you can't fix it. It's so compacted.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one way to get around it. But there are many companies in town that have a real nice soil mix. Please be careful. Do not get pulverized soil. That is something that is so fine that it sheds water. Good luck on that.
Ashley,
great.
Does
Thank
that help?
You.
Thanks
yes,
a lot.
Very much. Thanks.
You bet. Deborah will be back, I hope, soon. Maybe sometime in May, you know, we can get you back when the planting season actually
Love
begins.
To.
And we can celebrate that together. My guest, Deborah Knapke, author of Best Garden Plants for Ohio and Gardening Month by Month in Ohio. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820. This is listener-supported WOSU and WOSU HD 820 Columbus and streaming on the web at WOSU.org, WOSU 820. NPR News.
Support for WOSU comes from The Other Paper, Columbus's news and entertainment weekly, on newsstands every Thursday and online at theotherpaper.com.